Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Obama is pledging to go all out to contain an oil spill off the Gulf Coast that the administration has described as one of national significance. He spoke on the issue just moments ago. The oil slick could reach the Gulf Coast within a day and threatens environmental disaster. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano says the priority now is to help the oil company BP as much as possible.
We will continue to push BP to engage in the strongest response possible. We will continue to oversee their efforts, to add to those efforts where we deem necessary, and to ensure, again, that under the law, that the taxpayers of the United States ultimately are reimbursed for those efforts.
The spill occurred after an oil rig platform exploded, caught on fire, and sank last week. Rescuers have located the body of one of the two miners trapped underground in a collapsed Western Kentucky coal mine since late yesterday. There's still no word yet on the second victim. Chad Lampe of member station WKMS reports crews have had to temporarily stop their operation because the site was unstable.
The United States Mine Safety and Health Administration reports a roof section collapsed around 500 feet below the surface of the Webster County Dotiki mine last night. Rescue efforts began overnight. Reports indicate rescue personnel traveled approximately 4 miles by conveyance to the area where the miners are trapped. United Mine Workers Communication Director Phil Smith explains the process for a search and rescue when dealing with a roof collapse.
They're going to try and go in and begin removing the rock that's fallen, and at the same time then stabilizing the roof overhead. As they're going along, they're making quite a bit of noise. So they would stop from time to time and listen to see if there's anything, sounds coming back from the other side.
Oklahoma-based Alliance Coal owns the mine, which has more than 350 employees. For NPR News, I'm Chad Lampe in Murray, Kentucky.
One Republican senator predicts the debate to overhaul the financial system in the U.S. will be a shocker. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee says the GOP is ready to take on the Democratic-led plan for expanded consumer protection and tougher oversight of banking practices. The Republican leadership had said it was all for improving the system, but warned against any measure that could allow for the kind of taxpayer bailouts that were unpopular with many voters at the height of the financial crisis. More data out of the Labor Department today. Officials say that in first-time unemployment claims, that figure dropped last week by 11,000, marking some improvement, but analysts were expecting a steeper drop. They say it signals that the jobs market is improving, though progress is happening slowly. This is NPR News.
This is WNYC AM and FM New York. Sunny, breezy, 65 degrees in Central Park at 2:04. Good afternoon, I'm Amy Eddings. Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch says despite a nearly 1 month late budget and an expected cash crunch in June, New York lawmakers are far from an agreement on a spending plan. WNYC's Bob Henley has more.
Ravitch told the real estate developers in the audience that he cannot predict when the governor and the legislature will reach a deal on closing more than a $9 billion budget gap. And unlike the city's fiscal crisis in the 70s, when the city couldn't find any lenders, he says bankers are circling Albany with tempting offers.
The financial community is ready to lend the state all kinds of money. They have 20-odd schemes they are suggesting in Albany about how the state can borrow money.
But Ravitch says New York has to be careful. Borrowing would dig the state even deeper into fiscal trouble. And he says New York is not alone. The 50 states are facing a total of $350 billion in deficits and more than $2 trillion in unfunded pension liabilities. For WNYC, I'm Bob Henley.
Attorneys for the mother of an emotionally disturbed man who was shot to death 12 years ago by police say the NYPD has agreed to meet with her as the settlement to a wrongful death suit. Loretta Cerbelli says she wants to discuss reforms with police officials. But Professor Eugene O'Donnell of John Jay College of Criminal Justice says he doesn't expect anything to come from the meeting.
It is window dressing because the outrage here should be about this continuously broken system and our failure to acknowledge that it's a mental health system issue.
No response yet from the NYPD to news of the settlement. St. Vincent's Medical Center closes for good tomorrow. A sign on the door of the Greenwich Village Institution says it will close down operations tomorrow at 8 a.m. Sunny, breezy, 65 degrees, headed to a breezy low of 52 tonight. WNYC New York, it's 2:06.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
So,
whether in music videos, on the opera stage, or at the art museum, artists are bearing all. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, why nude is the new black. And later, we hear from American folk and country music singer and songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter. But first, it's no secret that scantily clad women have been a prominent feature in rap videos and mainstream pop for quite some time. But now it's not just models and extras taking it off. Just this month, R&B artist Erykah Badu was charged with disorderly conduct after shedding her clothes in public for the video to this song, Window Seat. Elsewhere, pasty indie rockers are showing some skin, and even opera singers are slimming down knowing that they too may be asked to go sing in their birthday suits. So, where do the lines between art and sensationalism lie? To uncover this, we're joined by Lizzie Goodman, music writer and author of the recent book Cat Power, A Good Woman. And on the line with us is James Jordan. He is editor of the opera blog Parterre Box. To both of you, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
Good to be here.
Lizzie, let me start with you. Musicians, you know, sort of bearing all. This is not a new phenomenon, but we seem to be seeing a lot more of it these days.
I know. It's not a new phenomenon. I think what's interesting about the kind of at least recent crop of artists going nude is that it's a lot of indie artists. I mean, we're sort of used to the idea of sensational exhibitionist nudity in the pop realm. Madonna, Britney Spears, all the idea of sort of sexualized nudity mm-hmm. as an element of what draws people into a particular artist's pop vision. That's not new. What's interesting, what is new is like Matt and Kim naked in Times Square. I mean, this is like a duo of indie rockers from Brooklyn, and the whole execution of the nudity is very sort of supposedly lo-fi. Oh, we're just doing this. We just took off our clothes. We're making a statement, but it's still the same idea. I mean, they're doing what Madonna does, which is essentially, you know, they understand the same truth. If you are naked, people will look at you. That seems to happen somehow.
It's sort of like, well, in the case of Matt and Kim, it's probably like, ooh, but I am still looking, but ooh.
Well, you know, that it's funny you should say that, actually, because I think we may find a little backlash into not so much criticism for those pop stars for all their airbrushing and all their elegant lighting and so on. You know what? They look a lot better naked than these indie rock kids, too.
James, is there anything new in this regard going on in the opera world?
Well, we actually saw some nudity this year at the Met, and actually I think the record that was set was that this was the first time we saw frontal male nudity at the Metropolitan Opera.
Really? In what case?
This was in Janáček's opera From the House of the Dead, directed by Patrice Chéreau. And as Lizzie was pointing out, this wasn't in any sense a sexualized nudity. It was a number of prisoners in the plot of the opera that takes place in a prison camp. A number of prisoners coming into the yard in the morning, and some of them were clothed and some of them were naked, obviously having just washed in the morning. And it really sort of brought home a very subtle point about that loss of dignity that happens in any sort of prison situation.
So in this case, and I remember that scene, the cast members who are naked as they enter are soon dressed. I mean, it's basically there's a real verisimilitude. Because, you know, it's guys who have clearly just woken up and, as you say, washed up, and now they're getting dressed. And we happen to be watching.
Right, and it's obviously, since it's taking place at a Russian gulag, it's not like they're going to be getting a lot of sun if they remain nude.
All right. This is a far cry from one of the very celebrated cases in the news right now, Lizzie, which is Erykah Badu, the song that we opened with called Window Seat.
Yes.
the video. You've seen the video.
Yes.
She's walking through Dealey Plaza, Dealey Square,
mm-hmm.
Plaza in Dallas, shedding her clothes until she is clothesless.
Totally nude. Yes, exactly.
And then collapsing as if shot in a heap on the ground.
Right.
What do you make of this?
Well, you know, that she's naked? I mean,
she's naked in Dealey Plaza
yes,
where JFK
exactly.
was assassinated.
No, I know. I sort of think that that's what's interesting about it is that what do you make of this is the second question that you ask, because the first question is sort of, it's not even a question. It's just the kind of uproar that she's nude in the first place. Obviously, that's an attention grabbing thing to do, to just sort of strip like that. And whatever the question then remains, though, what is she trying to draw attention to, aside from the fact that she's naked? And that is not as clear as you might think. I mean, she hasn't, in her sort of explication of, she's been fined for this, it's gotten a ton of press. She did it live. She did it in one take. She didn't get any permits. She didn't warn anyone. There are the sort of shocked faces you're seeing on in the crowd as she's doing this in the video are real for all reports. And so to have done that, she's talked about this a lot. And in explaining this event, she hasn't really explained exactly what the point of drawing all this attention is. It seems to be some sort of protest. She says that, you know, she's obviously, she loves JFK. That's something she said. You know, this is not supposed to dishonor his memory, which is one thing people have said about this. But it's like, okay, well, now that you have our attention, what do you have to say? And it's hard to know. I mean, I certainly haven't gotten an answer from that. I love her. I love the record. I know what that's about, but I'm not sure what this was supposed to draw our attention to.
Well, so how much, when we do see Matt and Kim or Erykah Badu, and by the way, Soundcheck listeners, you can see all of Matt and Kim and all of Erykah Badu. The videos are posted on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. How much of it is artistic? How much of it is just good, clean fun? Drop out the clean, perhaps. Good, dirty fun. And how much of it is really going back to the kind of exploiting, you know, the sexualization of gender roles and things like that that you mentioned with Madonna
right,
and Britney and stuff?
I mean, I think that that is a case-by-case thing. I think with the Matt and Kim example, that to me seemed very much like a video that was itself supposed to be a piece of performance art. Like, you don't watch the Matt and Kim video per se and say, what statement are they making? I mean, it's kind of clear the piece itself speaks for itself. So, you know, I mean, it's a lo-fi kind of indie, a little bit shock art-ish, but it's basically, it's contained. With the Erykah Badu thing, it's, I don't know what she's trying to say.
Well, here is Matt and Kim. This is the song called Lessons Learned. And again, as Lizzie Goodman just told us, the song kind of speaks for itself, and certainly the video as well. Matt and Kim, butt naked in Times Square in the video for this song called Lessons Learned. Lots of people get naked in the song Lust for Life in the video for this song by the group called Girls. This one is really, really not suitable for the workplace. And we could make a big fire every night. Instead, I'm just crazy. I'm totally mad. The band Girls and their song Lust for Life with a somewhat explicit music video attached. And at the silly end of the spectrum, but still naked, the band Flaming Lips with the video for their song Watching the Planets. band Flaming Lips, Watching the Planets is the name of the song. Music video sees frontman from the Flaming Lips getting naked with a bunch of other naked people. And we're talking about nudity making a big comeback in the world of music, music videos, in museums, even on the opera stage. And we'll find out more about that in a moment. But first, into the control room, where hopefully producer Joel Meyer is wearing clothes and has some comments for us. Joel?
Well, you can't see me, John, so you don't know. One thing I love, John, about looking at the soundcheck page is when commenters speak back and forth to one another. And I'd like to share an exchange with you. AG from Hudson County, one of our regular commenters on our site, writes, "We Americans seem bugged out by male frontal nudity. Is Europe a lot more egalitarian in this regard?" And Barry from Chelsea responds, AG, it's because dudes are naturally unattractive. As Elaine said on Seinfeld, the female is a sensual thing, a work of art, as in Botticelli. Men are utilitarian, functional, like a Jeep. And Barry adds, keep your pants on, fellas.
Well, there's a soundcheck smackdown waiting to happen. What about that? James, James Jordan from the opera blog Parterre Box, what about that idea that maybe Americans are a little more scandalized by male frontal nudity, as you were talking about in the Janáček opera before, than their counterparts in Europe?
I guess that's possible. I know that at least in opera, there's some kind of tradition of female nudity because it's a sexualized nudity. And so I think maybe that idea of being able to compartmentalize the nudity into something that's sexual is something that Americans are comfortable with. I mean, they may not be happy always, or they may complain about all these naked women on stage, but at least they're able to understand that that's because it has something to do with sex, whereas maybe in Europe they're a little more comfortable with the idea of nudity having other meanings besides just sexuality.
So can nudity on the stage, on the opera stage, can it serve a legitimate purpose? Do you see it actually called for in the scores and the stage directions of some operas, or is it done for shock value?
Well, when we say the stage directions, if we're talking about a work that was written, say, in the 1870s or the 1890s, obviously they could not call for nudity on stage at that time. That would be impossible. The place would have been closed down, as it would have been until recently. However, I think there's a spirit in a lot of works where nudity could be part of the show.
What about Wagner's Tannhäuser, where there's the scene of people sort of frolicking about,
Well, this is one of the excuses that has always been given for a display of at least undraped flesh, if not necessarily 100% full nudity, is the composer will write in an orgy scene,
right,
which may or may not have to do a lot with the plot. I mean, obviously, in real life, orgies don't drive political events all that strongly, but In the time,
I can think of a few examples that might.
Well, let's just say that necessarily having to depict them on stage does not
okay,
drive the plot so strongly. But in Tannhäuser, for example, or in Samson and Delilah, in Thais, in Zalame, there are all examples of places where a sexualized nudity can be shown to the audience in the guise of it being part of the proceedings of the action.
All right. Now, Zalame, the Dance of the Seven Veils, has got to be the most kind of celebrated example of this. And there is a tradition of women doing it in a sort of coy way with genuine veils and stuff. But recently, Karita Matala, the splendid Finnish singer, actually dropped that seventh veil on stage.
I thought she did a splendid job with that, as you said, and I thought it was both a brave choice and a very, very savvy choice the way she performed the nudity. One stumbling block here is that Matala, even though she's in very good shape and a beautiful woman, she is into her 40s, approaching 50, whereas the character is supposed to be a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a bit of dissonance there for the viewer. But the way she had it staged, the way she allowed only a glimpse of the full nudity before servants surrounded her and dressed her again, I think made exactly the effect she was looking for, which was almost have the audience look and say, did I just see what I thought I saw?
Mm.
And then it was gone.
Well, the Met has actually censored its own HD broadcasts of that scene in Salome, although, of course, you get to hear the music by Strauss, as we hear in this excerpt. Some of the Richard Strauss music for Salome's Dance of the Seven Veils from the opera Salome, and Carita Mattila taking it all off during her performances of this piece. We're speaking about nudity in music. It's made a big comeback in recent days and months. Lizzie Goodman's here with me in the studio, freelance music writer, and James Jordan on the phone, editor of the opera blog Parterre Box. There is nudity in the music videos that we've been talking about, Erykah Badu, Matt and Kim. You can watch both of them on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. James telling us about nudity in the world of opera as well. And a recent article in the New York Times reports on Marina Abramovich's exhibit at MoMA, which, according to the Times, left spectators somewhat nonplussed. There's graphic nudity and performance art, and the exhibit features a 1977 piece called Imponderabilia, in which two naked performers stand facing each other to create a narrow human doorway that you, as a visitor, can pass through if you dare. WNYC's culture site went to MoMA and asked museum-goers how they felt about the exhibit, and this is what they had to say.
Well, I had read about it before, so I wasn't completely shocked or totally surprised, but my reaction actually walking through was one of a bit of an intrusion and sense of humor.
At first, when we first went in there, it felt kind of weird, but then there were just, like, so many nude people in there. It was just like, all right, it's still kind of weird, but we got kind of used to it after a while.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's all art, so I mean, I guess it's not the worst thing in the world. Still, anything about it.
I came here specifically, well, I mean, I didn't know that I would choose to go through the bodies, but, I mean, I came here specifically for that installation, for Marina's work in general. So, I wouldn't say that I was shocked, but it's still, you know, bodies in space in without clothing on is definitely, it's just very provocative.
Especially if you have to squeeze between the two of them. Marina Abramovich's exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art was the occasion for those comments that you just heard. All right, Soundcheck listeners, what do you think? How do you feel? Hot or just bothered? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC or leave a comment at wnyc.org/soundcheck. We're talking about nudity in the arts and specifically in music and music videos on the opera stage. And Lizzie, you know, how does a nude appearance, whether it's on stage or in a video, does that kind of, is that a marker on an artist's career? Is that kind of a tipping point for the way we view an artist?
I think, as we're saying in a lot of these situations, it depends on what you do with it. The overarching theme that we seem to be discussing here is that when people get naked, you look. And then the sort of the second step is what really counts. Then what? Are they naked in Marina's case for a reason that has to do not at all with sex, but has to do with some sort of creative statement? Are they naked in a way that has to do, in the case of opera, perhaps with a natural scene in a daily life and we're trying to represent that the most accurately? Are they naked, as in the case with girls, the girls' video, because this appears to be how they hang out all the time, these like fun hipster kids who have all these like pretty female friends and everyone's of indeterminate sexuality and they just lay around in like lipstick and no clothes on all day. I mean, maybe that's your life, you know? So, but the point is then, you know, then what? And I think in some cases, if it appears to be, at least in music, especially indie music, if it appears to be blatantly exhibitionist, there's something uncool about that. Some of these artists are running the risk of seeming cheap, seeming to sort of do a stunt that doesn't have any real meaning behind it. And if that happens, that can be a slippery slope, especially for an artist who really relies on cred.
James, let me ask the same question to you. I mean, Lizzie used the word stunt. Is that term being thrown around for some of the productions that we've been talking about?
Well, you know, it's curious. This past season, we had a production by Bartlett Scheer of The Tales of Hoffman, and he introduced into the Venice scene, which is supposed to take place in a bordello, but anyway, he introduced into the scene a number of sort of showgirls in, you know, the fishnet hose and pasties who wandered through the action through the entire scene, and all well and good. I mean, you know, women semi-nude in a bordello is not completely incongruous, but then again, the Met decided to show this production on HD, and for the HD, all the women were wearing sports bras. So I thought, I mean, I'd seen the production on the opening night. I went there as critic for the New York Post, and then I saw the HD production, and I thought, this is really silly looking. I mean, it really looks like someone said, you know, well, look out, everybody, here comes the coach. Or these women looked really very silly wearing these additional bras. I could see maybe putting them in bras from the beginning and making the bras a little more, you know, courtesan-like, or not putting the bras on them, but bras or no bras seems an odd decision for us to be making into the 21st century.
Well, we are in the 21st century where, you know, the internet rules. And Lizzie, we didn't really get into this at the beginning, but, you know, if there is more nudity in music videos, shouldn't that be put down to the fact that there is no MTV, there's no broadcast outlet, and it's all the wild, wild west of the internet?
That's absolutely. I mean, it's definitely the case that we're seeing this in part as this explosion of nudity because it's now possible to do that, and people have formats in which they can view these things. This would never have happened in an era where everything was being censored. So maybe it was always waiting. Everyone was always waiting to take all of their clothes off. We just didn't know until the onset of the internet.
And Wagner really wanted all those people on the mountainside in Tannhäuser to be naked, and now we're at a stage where I suppose some directors can actually make that happen. Let's take a call from Janet on the line with us from White Plains. Janet's been trolling some of these videos on the web. What do you think, Janet?
In regard to Erica's video.
Erica Badu, yeah.
Which I found very tasteful. Although I'm a fan of Beyonce and Lady Gaga, the telephone video I find is very degrading to women, and I spent a lot of time discussing that with my 15-year-old daughter.
What do you find degrading in the telephone video? This is the one that people are complaining about. Product placement, you seem to be complaining about something very different.
The style, the needless S&M and bondage and violence that's in there, and the in contrast, I believe that Erykah Badu was making an evidence statement to me that when you speak out and expose yourself, you're shot down. And I tried to discuss that and show the contrast to my 15-year-old daughter. Erykah Badu was dressed very simply. It wasn't, to me, a sexual thing. More of almost a spiritual thing.
So a stripping bare in terms of exposing the truth about herself or something like that. That's a really interesting and funny that Janet mentions Lady Gaga, because, Lizzie, you've been working
on a fashion book about her. So I know all about her bondage obsession. And it's definitely there. That's really an interesting interpretation. Now that you say that, it sounds really obvious. But I like that. I mean, it's true. Erykah Badu was not sort of tarted up, so to speak, at all. It doesn't appear to have been a sexual statement at all. But I personally don't watch the video and then know immediately what she's trying to tell me. I just know she's trying to tell me something. But I think that's a really accurate and interesting interpretation.
All right, let's once again head into the control room. Our producer, Joel Meyer, with more of the comments coming in at WNYC.org/soundcheck. Joel?
John, a little while ago, you put a word out there about our conversation. You used the word stunt and put that to our guest, James Jordan. I think Cynthia, our listener on Long Island, might agree with the word stunt in our conversation. Cynthia writes, I have nothing against being naked. The argument that any artist uses nudity to get people's attention to make some profound statement seems ridiculous to me. When has anyone ever said, oh, that dude or chick is naked, I better pay attention to what he has to say? It's to get people to buy stuff. Now, the conversation between AG and Barry, I'll have you know, John, is continuing on the website. Nothing I can really – I've got to leave it on the soundcheck page, unfortunately.
This was the conversation about whether dudes were just sort of inherently less attractive than –
Correct. Quoting a Seinfeld episode liberally. And our listener, Francis, asked us to post a video by the band Sigur Rós and their song Gobbledygook, which I can best describe in two words, wood nymphs. And I wondered, well, why didn't Francis post the link himself? And then I looked a little closer and I noticed that it's Francis from work is his identification on the site. So be careful out there, folks.
Well, it's been an NSFW edition of Soundcheck so far, but we're going to clean things up in just a couple of minutes. But let me first thank Lizzie Goodman, freelance music writer and author of the Sean Marshall biography, Cat Power, A Good Woman, and James Jordan, who is editor of the opera blog Parterre Box. Lizzie, James, always a pleasure to talk to the two of you. Thanks for being with us today.
It's been great, John.
And up next, a pair of albums by artists who perform fully clothed. A bass player and an indie band with prog rock leanings are our picks of the week. And coming up later, Mary Chapin Carpenter is a passionate advocate of free speech and a 5-time Grammy winner. She'll share her new album with us later on Soundcheck.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
So Erykah Badu takes off her clothes and then collapses as if shot in the same plaza where JFK was assassinated. What is that about? I don't get it. I don't think I like it. But it certainly is memorable.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.